Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast, episode 71. I'm Mo and I'm here with Elle and Alice. How the devil are you both?
Excited.
Good.
Excited? That's good. What are you excited about?
Well, it's just been a really good week for live music, as we'll talk about. And it's Rammstein on Saturday.
It is Rammstein on Saturday. The ridiculously big geeks. We're the big geeks. The ridiculously big gigs keep on coming. Speaking of which, I went to Glastonbury this past weekend.
You did.
I certainly did.
Can you tell us all about it?
I'm sure glad you asked me to, because that's exactly what I was going to do, by golly. I mean, I've been going to Glastonbury as an adult punter. I went a couple of times as a kid. But I've been going to Glastonbury.
When I was a kid?
Yeah, my parents took me.
That's amazing.
When I was... I can work this out. November, December, January, February, March, April, May, June. 7 months old.
What? That's insane.
I was small enough so that my dad took me on one of those little carry things that you put to the front of your... That you wear.
That is super cool.
You want your little baby rucksack.
Oh, your first gig.
Yeah, exactly. But I've been going as an adult, as it were, or at least of my own accord, for about 16 years now. And... It really is so cool to be going to somewhere like Glastonbury and seeing metal there. Obviously, they had the Napalm, the Earache stage there in 2017, and that was really cool. And they had some bands kind of tucked away in there. They had Horror and a few others in there. They had Napalm Death on the outdoor stage. This year, the metal, the Earache stage, as it were, was called Scum, and it was all just done. I mean, it was done great the first time, but it felt really tucked away and hidden last time, you know, which is understandable because it's the first time they'd done all that kind of stuff. This time they had this big red, what's it called, the bit on the back of a lorry, like the trailer, I guess. Not the bit the person's like driving in, the actual things.
I think it's called a bed.
A bed?
I think so.
Really?
I thought it was.
You know that bit, I mean? Not the bit someone's driving in, the bit that actually everything's stored in on the back of the lorry.
I thought it was like the cab and the bed.
Okay.
But I don't know.
We'll go with that then.
Someone can write in and tell us.
They had a giant lorry bed painted with Scum written on it in really heavy metal writing in the middle of Shangri-La. I said a couple of weeks ago, Shangri-La's kind of like... if you've been to Glastonbury, it must be at least 20 times the size of Download. Like, it's so, so big. Shangri-La is its own dedicated little area. It's got these kind of arty, cool installations and colourful, like, indoor club areas you can go into and outdoor club areas. It's kind of where basically where punters go to find the best place to just party after the main bands have finished. It's pretty much a 24-hour area. I don't think it closes there at any point. So it's a weird place for these kind of little pockets of metal to be. And the Scum stage, like I said, is tucked away behind this big red trailer that they've got just parked in the middle of Shangri-La. So you can't really miss the trailer. And then if you see the trailer, you can kind of go in. So I got to Glastonbury on the Thursday. It was baking hot. Most of the festival had already been there and active for a day or two by that point. Settled down, chilled out with some friends for a bit, and then made a beeline for the Scum stage to see Employed to Serve. They were playing on the little indoor bit I just mentioned, and I'd say it was probably about 200 or 300 capacity, something like that. I'd say a bit bigger than the Barfly used to be in London.
Yeah,
that kind of size. And it was the only bit, it seemed to be the only bit in the whole fucking festival that had mud in it. Like, the rest of the ground was beautiful and green and lush, and then you went inside the one little metal bit and it was like muddy and sticky. I was like, for fuck's sake, man. And it was called Scum, obviously. Employed to Serve came on at about, I can't remember what it was now, about 10 p.m. or something like that, maybe a bit later. And you could tell that there was a mixture of metalheads who were excited to be there, rock fans who obviously knew that it was like a rock gig, so they wanted to check it out, and just total randomers who had no idea what was going on.
I love that.
It was really cool.
I love that people could just stumble into it and have no idea what they're going to see or no idea what is hitting them.
Yeah, it was wicked. And again, it's something I'll probably get into a bit more when I talk about Gojira, but having been to Glastonbury all these years and obviously having been to metal gigs for all these years, there was something really, really refreshing and fun about seeing metal bands in just a place that doesn't quite feel right. Not so much if there's no one there, but in this case, the room was packed out. People were excited to be there. The band came on. Justine just said, "We are employed to serve. Fuck the Killers," and just burst into like,
"Fuck the Killers."
Yeah, it was so good because the Killers were headlining the main stage, the Pyramid Stage, on Saturday night. And yeah, they were just great. They've had this for a while, but I love the kind of matching, like, I don't know what you call them, like almost like shell suit tops that they've got. Do you know what I mean? What are those called?
No, I don't know what they're called.
I feel very unlike a man of the world today. I don't know what anything's fucking called.
A shell suit top.
Like, yeah, kind of like matching shell suit top things, like black with a little employed serve logo on. So they just look cool. The crowd was really into it. There were circle pits going around. Eternal Forward Motion sounded absolutely colossal. They were just great. Really, really, really good. Oh, God. I just accidentally started playing some of that song. Hope we don't get sued for that. But yeah.
Review purposes.
It was review purposes, exactly. That was a little bit of employed service just accidentally played because I was trying to remember what set they played. But they were just so, so good. The crowd was really into it. You could see some quite bemused faces, but I think, you know, Glastonbury has a bit of a negative reputation sometimes for the type of people that go there. I think people look at the BBC One highlights and just think it's all dappy, blonde-haired, 21-year-old women with like flower heads like on, just going, "Oh, I'm at Glastonbury taking selfies and being posh and all of that." What you say?
Like the Coachella of the
exactly,
UK.
Exactly. I think people. I mean, I've never been to Coachella, so
like
I guess
millennials doing acid and mushrooms.
Exactly, and like, running around being like totes random. And oh, I'm such a festival person, even though I'm actually staying in a posh teepee, slightly offsite. And there is a lot of that at Glastonbury. There is, but actually, I think it was a really good example of how people aren't as close-minded to metal as we often think they are. And when you actually look at the crowd that was mulling about for Employed to Serve, the people that clearly didn't have a clue who they were still appreciating it. And you had a couple of people that were kind of like ironically headbanging and go, Rocky. But 99% of the crowd in there was just really enjoying it. And that included people that had obviously not heard of them before. And that was great. And then, that night, then I went on to see Denzel Curry, who was really cool.
You love him.
I do love him. He's very good. Although he only had half an hour on one of the outdoor stages, so it wasn't quite as alternative and experimental as I hoped it might be. I don't think he had much time to do stuff. But yeah, Friday was kind of the biggest day of metal for me because there was Entombed AD were on really late that night on the Scum stage. I didn't get to see them. But I did go and see Venom Prison and Gojira one after the other on the Truth stage. So the Truth stage is one of the outdoor stages in Shangri-La. And I guess Earache, who put all the metal build together this year, get to nominate a couple of bands to play that stage as well. So Venom Prison played there, and it was about 9 p.m. on the Friday night. Obviously, on the Friday, there's bands playing all the other big venues, and there's like 60 of them or something. So the Pyramid stage was active, the Secondary stage was active, all the big tents were active, so not as many people just kind of milling about. And for a minute it looked like it was going to be like dead. About 10 minutes before they came on, there was like maybe 15 people kind of hung over the barrier, and that was it in what is quite a big field, like I'd say about 2,000 people sized field. And so I was a bit like, oh no, this isn't going to work. But then it crowded up a little bit more, so there's more people there, and then they actually came on and Larissa just went, "We are Venom Prison, move the fuck off," and like everyone kind of went "Ooh," and like rushed into the front, and then it started to swell out and swell out more, and you could tell people were turning up to watch Gojira, who were on afterwards, and all that kind of stuff. And again, like in this case, devastatingly heavy set. They sounded awesome. Once more, you could tell people that didn't know what the fuck was going on seeing Larissa come out with those kind of like vocals. I had a friend with me who's not into metal at all, and that was his first, he didn't come to Employed to Serve the night before, it was his first ever metal gig, and he was blown away. Like, he had no idea what was going on. He'd never seen a singer do that before.
Yeah, and I guess you have, like you're saying about people not knowing metal, if you've never been to a metal gig, you don't even know maybe what is possible vocally. No. You don't know that metal fans like headbang and have mosh pits or crowd surf.
Yeah.
There's just all these things we take for granted because we're just so used to them. But if you're a complete newcomer to metal, you'd be like, what is going on?
Yeah, exactly. And he had no idea. And, you know, I think he was genuinely shocked that a woman would make a noise like that. Like, because it's just not something that's on your radar if you're not familiar with bands like, you know, Arch Enemy and various others. But yeah, they were great. They're going down really well. I think people really warm to them. Like, again, Glastonbury is really a festival where people expect to see something a bit weird and outside of their comfort zone at some point. And you're so people were really like, oh my God, this is so impressive. And people were really like warm towards it. And again, there were a lot of metalheads there. Like, there were people who knew who they were or at least are more familiar with that kind of music.
That is the nice thing about Glastonbury, I remember from going, is that you do get primed to it. You walk around, you don't know what kind of people you're going to meet, you don't know what you're going to see, you don't know what you're going to stumble across. And the whole thing is sort of like the element of surprise. So anything that happens, you just kind of take it in your stride and you just enjoy it, which is a really nice atmosphere to be in. And again, not very common when it comes to metal. There aren't many places where you can just kind of speak to a number of open-minded people who wouldn't usually listen to that kind of music, so it's actually a really cool thing.
And just as another way to just as another way to underline what a weird atmosphere Glastonbury is, especially now that it's got metal in it. After Employed to Surf finished, I walked outside and literally across this tiny little, I guess, grassy avenue you'd call it or whatever, the stage on the other side of this one tiny little bit, I'm literally a 7 second walk away.
Yeah.
There's this really good drum and bass label called Hospital, and they had this massive Hospital Records takeover, and it was just this banging drum and bass rave with about 1,000 people just going mental to it. So that was really weird. And then when Bed in Prison were playing, you know Craig Charles?
Yeah.
The Coronation Street actor. Yeah, so he does a really good, like, kind of soul and funk.
I know him from Red
set.
Dwarf and
of course.
And Robot Wars.
I can't believe I can't believe I said Coronation Street before I said Red Dwarf.
And Robot
pathetic.
Dwarf as well.
Yeah, and Robot Wars.
Everyone remembers Matilda.
So, yeah, from Red Dwarf, I should have said. Anyway, Living Legends and all that. But does a funk set, and he DJed before Bed in Prison came on, and he stood by the side of the stage and watched the whole set. And if you watch, if you go on Ben and Prism's Instagram, they actually got a photo with him afterwards.
I've seen that.
So he was obviously impressed.
I was like, how did that even come about?
We noticed him. We were like, is that Craig Charles? Like, so yeah, it was just unbelievable. Just a really, really cool mixed atmosphere. Saturday, I didn't see much in the metal vein. It was, I mean, bakingly hot. I basically hid the whole time until Chemical Brothers were.
But how do you hide? Because there's nowhere to hide.
Well, there's the shady
Hare Krishna tent.
Yeah, the Hare Krishna tent. And also, it's so big and it's got so many fields to it, you can go right up and away near the Stone Circle and all that and actually find, like, trees to hide under.
Yeah,
and
that's
stuff.
A really good point, actually. I forgot about the Stone Circle.
Yeah, yeah. It's a big old place. So, yeah, I didn't see much in the way of proper heavy stuff, unless you count Chemical Brothers. On Saturday, should just shout out as well, there were so many tributes to Keith Flint across the weekend.
That's
and
cool.
It genuinely was quite emotional at points. Kems did a big tribute to him at the end of their set. Liam Gallagher dedicated Champagne Supernova to him, and I saw people dressed like Keith Flint. I saw loads of murals that had been painted around the site, people had loads of flags. It was just a really, you know, it was sad because it just kept bringing to mind, like, what had happened, but it was also nice because it just reminds you what an impact he's had on, you know, he had on alternative culture and music. So that was very moving, and again, something that felt very specific to Glastonbury because the Prodigy played there for years. They headlined in '97, you know.
Yeah.
So that was quite a moving thing that we saw across the weekend. Sunday, Baby Metal and Bring Me the Horizon played the other stage, which it is actually called the other stage. It's the second biggest stage at Glastonbury, and I mean the actual size of the stage is about as big as Download, I think. So it's still
a big
old stage.
Yeah.
Baby Metal played. I missed Slades because I was packing my stuff in my mate's car, and it took an hour to get back in. So that's Glastonbury. Baby Metal played about 2:30 in the afternoon. They had a really big crowd, like really, really impressive size crowd. I think. Definitely, we're talking about Glastonbury being a good place for you know, weird, slightly left of centre things to get a good reaction. And I think people probably have heard of Baby Metal. And
yeah, I reckon it's the kind of band people probably heard a little bit about, but don't really know too much.
Yeah, exactly.
Turn up and see what happens.
And again, in the same way that people kind of saw what Larissa was doing and was just like, this is amazing, what am I watching here? You could tell people just really warming to Baby Metal as the set went on. First couple of songs, people were like, what is this? Really, really weird. And then when they played... three tracks in, they played the new track, the untitled new track.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that's out there or not, but so I thought was amazing.
I'm going to talk about that in a bit, actually, because I saw them last night.
Okay, cool. Yeah. What do you think of that track then? Because I thought it was great. It's so bouncy.
So basically,
it's got this like... It's like really dancey and like...
I don't know. I mean, the one that I'm thinking of, it just sounds like it's something from Bollywood.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
So it's really interesting.
That's what I mean. It's got
they
that
have all these rhythms, and they're all dancing to it. And actually, on the set list last night from Brixton, it's listed as Ind Metal. So IND hyphen metal, as in Indian metal. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. So it's, I think it's really fascinating how they do appropriate different bits of culture, and they've sort of taken this from Bollywood and made like a sort of Bollywood metal song.
It's but so good,
not
though.
Just Bollywood metal song, Bollywood Japanese metal song, because it still sounds like Baby Metal and sounds like everything that they have going on. And they had a dance routine as well that's obviously like their normal kind of dance routines, all with the sort of hand movements and stuff, but it felt like it sort of had a bit more Bollywood kind of flow to
definitely.
It
definitely, and it added
super interesting.
It added the kind of it just made the whole set feel bouncier, and
so
I think that was where the crowd really started to get into it. And then once people realised how good a singer Sue Metal is and how heavy some of the songs are, I mean, like people definitely recognise Gimme Chocolate.
There
was a bigger reaction for that than anything
I mean,
else.
Like,
and again,
online,
there were loads of metalheads there. They were like proper diehard, beardy, hairy dudes like windmilling and headbanging in the crowd and all that. But even the more casual fans definitely recognise Gimme Chocolate.
Yeah.
And Karate, like...
I love that song.
That riff is still so heavy. And you could see people actually like physically react to it when the bang kicks in.
But it's so bouncy as well.
Yeah,
yeah, I know what you mean. Like the drumming on that opening bit, like, is really cool as well.
It's
like,
great. They went down so well, and I just thought, I keep saying this, but it's like it felt like such a wholesome gig. It reminded me of how just nice Baby Metal is like an idea and stuff. People were really into it. People were really winning them on. I think people were just really charmed by it, and I think in that kind of environment, I think Baby Metal are a really good ambassador for metal, because it just shows you how warm and fun and ridiculous it can be.
Exactly, and it's quite inclusive as well. Like, obviously there's lots of Easter eggs in Baby Metal's lore. If you're a metal fan, you'll find them elements of their show based on Metallica or Judas Priest, or little bits of their songs that are nods to other metal bands. But equally, if you don't know metal, they're just one of those bands that you can get into and easily access, and it doesn't feel like you have to be from any kind of special niche community. It just feels like something that you can sit down or stand up and enjoy without having any kind of knowledge or anything like that. It's
exactly.
Fun, accessible,
I think people
stuff.
Will definitely be going to check them out. Again, it was interesting because I watched them with a load of friends, some of whom into metal, some of whom are into metal but kind of checked out in about 2005 because they just got a bit older and stopped checking out new bands or whatever.
Yeah.
And everyone thought Baby Metal was really impressive. They were proper like, oh, what is this? This is crazy. I really like it. So that was really good. And then Bring Me the Horizon came on after that. I should say both these bands weren't part of kind of Earache's influence in booking any of the lineup. I think they were just added of their own merit, which makes sense because Bring Me have played before. They're really big now, and Baby Metal are just an interesting
phenomenon
thing. But it was cool because it did make it feel like metal had more of a presence overall at the festival, which is really wicked. Bring Me were good. I felt like they were up against it because they clashed with Kylie Minogue.
Oh, no.
Which is unusual, but Kylie's one of those things where I think if you happen to be somewhere she's playing, you're very unlikely to go buy a ticket for it, but it's Kylie Minogue will probably go see it.
Absolutely.
Just one of those things. So they had a slightly smaller crowd, or at least the same size crowd of Baby Metal.
Yeah.
It wasn't small by any means, but it wasn't like massive.
Yeah.
They were really good. Obviously, we saw the show at All Points East a few weeks ago, so it was very much a set-wise, slimmed-down version of that. It was still cool. People seemed to react to it really well.
Did they have all the dancers and stuff?
The what?
The dancers. They had it All Points East. Like in the different costumes, kind of dancing around. And
they did, yes. They did, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I still don't think fits.
I don't know, I kind of like it.
I like the idea, but it feels, I don't know. It feels a bit too contrived. And all stage sets are contrived, aren't they? Like, if you come up with some expansive, clever light show or pyro show, if you're Rammstein or Maiden or Metallica or whatever, like, it's contrived by its nature. But it just felt like, it feels like it's trying to be something that it isn't quite yet. I don't know what it is. It doesn't feel natural.
You feel like it's too try hard. Like, we're going to put on a big pop show, here's our big stage set.
Yeah, it does. Whereas, like, stuff like the screens they have and all that kind of thing, like, really fits with me with where the music's at now, and I think it works really well. It looks amazing. But the dancers feel like, this is what big bands do, so we should do it. And they're great. Like, they're really fucking good. But I don't know. I found that a bit odd. But apart from that, the rest of the set was good. Felt like Ollie maybe had a bit of a sore throat or something at one point. He sounded a bit throaty when he was talking to the crowd. Didn't notice him miming so much, but definitely let Jordan do a lot of the heavy lifting on the clean vocals.
Yeah, he usually does.
But people seem to like it. One of my mates was blown over by it, and they're like one of my favourite bands now. So,
oh wow,
like,
that's a convert.
It obviously works, and it obviously appeals to people who are into certain parts of music. So yeah, it worked well. I think they suit Glastonbury in terms of putting on a big show, and the, you know, there were still moments that were heavier than most other stuff you'll see on that festival that weekend. Not as heavy though as, beyond the shadow of a doubt, the best thing I saw all weekend, which was on the Friday night, so I did skip ahead a bit, but Gojira on the True stage was fucking unbelievable.
They're so good right now.
And I know Elle actually saw Gojira as well, so she'll talk about that probably a bit more, because they had more of a show they did at Glastonbury. Glastonbury, again, they've played the same set after Venom Prison, the same stage, sorry, after Venom Prison. So it was outdoor capacity, about 2,000 people, something like that. And they were just so devastatingly heavy, so devastatingly tight. They had the steam cannons, but that's the only thing they had from their show. Like, they barely even had a light show, they didn't have screens or anything. So it just felt like, I wouldn't go as far to say punk rock, but it felt like really candid and just in your face and just like,
I love how it was just really fucking heavy cool. They are, and how uncompromisingly heavy they are.
Yeah.
They just seem to love playing heavy music, and there just isn't a let up. They just go and play it with all that.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was like, this is great.
And it definitely seemed to strike a chord with the crowd. Most of the people there were metalheads. Basically, like, all the metalheads at Glastonbury had clearly turned up to Gojira.
Yeah, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. So there was loads of pitting, there was crowd surfing, there was moshing, but it wasn't quite as it was very much not as intense as the proper metal crowd. But it made it for a nice atmosphere, because there were some people dancing, some people just kind of like looking at it, not knowing what the fuck was going on. And it was outside, and that area of Shangri-La is really cool. It's got all the kind of like protest banners and art that people have put up for, you know, saving the environment, and, you know, all this perfect messaging all around the what?
Perfect setting for them.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just so nice and heartwarming seeing them in a slightly different place, because it really feels like it belongs. It feels like a place where you've got like every other kind of music covered, and you've got all this mad shit. Like, my mates went to see a guy playing a didgeridoo on the Thursday night. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's all sorts of shit there. It feels like you should be able to be at a festival like Glastonbury and stumble across something so heavy that you've got no reference point on it, and maybe it'll win you over, because that's how we've all got into music.
I agree as well.
None of us grew up with Napalm Death in our headphones.
It's about that element of discovery, and as we, you know, use stuff like Spotify and YouTube, and it more and more tailors our playlists to our preferences, and that's great because you can find more things you love. But that accidental discovery and coming across a world you didn't know existed, or a song you didn't know existed, or a band you didn't know existed, that is still so important. So having actual physical live events where people can do that is a great thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really nice to see, and I'm fully behind it. And Glastonbury is very much not for everyone. It's insanely big. It's really busy. If you find yourself in the wrong area, you can end up in a mad kind of crowd march full of, you know, pillheads or hipsters, or, you know, it just kind of depends where you end up. But I really love it, and I definitely think metal belongs there. And I think I think it can exist there without being tokenistic, and I also think it can exist there without diluting metal's capacity to put on its own festivals and stuff. You know, I don't think Download's going to be greatly affected by five or six metal bands getting booked for for Glastonbury. I mean, Download had one of the best lineups ever this year, yeah, and there was still room for Kajira and Venom Prison and Employed to Serve and Baby Metal to go play somewhere else. So yeah, I'm all for it, and it was really, really good. Also, a brief shout out to Dave, the grime rapper, for having the most metal stage set of the whole weekend. He literally just had a giant skull on stage, and that's all. He had with a kind of backing screamer visuals, and it looked amazing. It was so simple, but it looked so cool. So I very much enjoyed that. So yeah, oh, my voice has gone croaky. I went to see two of those bands as well this week. You saw Gojira first on Sunday, was it?
I did. They were both.
They had a much bigger stage show than they did when I saw them.
Yeah, they did. It was incredible. I didn't know what to expect. It was sold out, which is cool. But obviously, they are off cycle at the moment. I think they're working on a new record, so it's almost like a little bit of a strange time.
It's like a victory lap, isn't it?
It is a bit like a victory lap. But also, you were just kind of thinking, you know, like what kind of stage setup they would have, but. It was just incredible. First of all, the music started and the floor just filled with smoke. So when they actually came onto the stage, there was basically smoke like right up to their waists and all these lights like all over the stage. Brixton just looked amazing. It was super, super theatrical.
Mm-hmm.
They played Ouroboros and they just had CO2 jets and like all these lights, and they had Fire pretty early on. I can't remember which song it started on, but they just kind of came on, and it was just that the reaction was just whoa, it was just phenomenal. It's really difficult to describe. It was a really hot night as well, so it was just kind of this crazy, intense, hot show. Backbone, they played pretty early on, I think second, and that was just earth shattering. Like, those riffs are huge. The Cell, again, was massive, and that's my favourite Gojira track from the last record, and again, just super, super intense. They had the stage set was really cool. They had another level on the stage, which basically had Mario's drum kit on it.
Right.
And another mic stand up there, so Joe could go up there as well, which was kind of nice, because he was running around the stage a bit more than he usually does. And they had a screen of projections on the back that kind of came around in the circle to the front. So they had all these amazing visuals projected onto the stage, and then all these layers and layers and layers of lights, and then all this CO2 and this fire. So it was really like an assault on the senses. And it really makes you think, because, you know, if you go back 10, 20 years ago, we talked about this before, bands didn't really have that much of a production. You just got on a stage and you played music. And there's a level of expectation now that if you're playing a show, especially somewhere like Brixton, which is 5,000 capacity venue, and not only an achievement for a band in metal, also often seen as kind of the stepping stone to Wembley, to festival headlines, etc. People kind of expect you to bring production, mm-hmm. and what they brought was like an arena show in Brixton. It was super dramatic, and you could tell they're having a really good time.
I'm actually quite surprised by that. To bring that amount of stage show out for what was only a few English dates, especially because they couldn't even bring it to Glastonbury.
So I think they were filming it for a DVD.
Okay.
So I think they put extra effort into it, and they'd really spent a lot of time on the production. And Joe was amazing. He's really good as a frontman these days. I mean, he was good anyway, but now he's really interactive. He was talking to the crowd. He was getting people to scream. He was running around. He was kind of going up onto the level with Mario, and he just looked like he was having a whale of a time.
Fuck's sake.
Had to get a whale put in there. The thing about the production as well.
You make it sound like a stern BBC News headline when you say
a whale of a time. He's having a whale of a time.
Stop saying it!
But the thing that was so great about the production is not only did it really just grab you immediately, it was so well timed. So they're playing the Shooting Star and they just had a confetti shower right in the middle, completely unexpected.
Fucking love confetti and metal.
But it's one of those things where you might play a show and you might have one aspect of production and it might be confetti, and you finish your last song and the confetti cannon goes off at the end and you go, oh, that's nice, and you go home. But it's just one of these things where it was just another big surprise. You're like, what? And it just timed so perfectly in the song. So when they're playing these amazing riffs and Mario's drumming, all the confetti had just gone up to the ceiling and was just pouring down from the roof, and it was like this amazing kind of hypnotic death metal snowstorm. It was just brilliant. It was like being in a snow globe of death metal with Gojira. I just loved it so much. Like, the timing was perfect. And actually, there was so much of it that when I was at Baby Metal last night, it was all over the venue still. So they obviously haven't been able to clear it all up. But I mean, this was a bit gutting for them because they did have so much production and they had spent so much time on it. And I think they were filming it. They had people around, you know, with cameras out. That in the middle of it, Joe came over and he was like, someone has spilled a beer on the lighting desk. And it meant that they couldn't use, like, most of the lights that they brought the what? Special show. So they had, like, they were using house lights and they had...
Imagine being that guy.
They had just kind of lights fixed in place on the stage that were just permanently on. So they still looked great, but you could tell that he was really upset about it because it's a big show. There were, that first half of that show was absolutely crushing. And it was one of those ones that gives you goosebumps and makes you feel really alive and makes you go, yeah. like... This is an incredible band, like, not just in metal, but in the world. And I know that sounds like hyperbole, but genuinely, it, like, sort of grabs you by the heart, and you're like, the atmosphere was insane. The crowd as well, the whole time, they were just surging forward. I've not seen anything like that in years. Just literally, like, waves, like, surging forward towards the front, and crowd surfers, and one of the security guards was, like, totally into Gojira as well.
But yeah, wicked.
Just that crowd was, again, it was like this electric atmosphere. So you could tell he was upset, and that's kind of a shame because they did lose a bit of momentum, I think, because you could tell that they were kind of annoyed about that. But they pushed on with it, and the crowd was probably a great help because they were surging so much, and, you know, the crowd and the band were kind of feeding off each other. And it felt genuinely exciting and, like, genuinely vital, and... You know, obviously we're going to see Ramstein on Saturday, but it kind of just felt like the gig of the year. Like, it just felt like...
Awesome.
I was absolutely floored. It was incredible. Super incredible show.
So, honestly, 7 good. Out of 10?
No. I give it Infinity Wales.
Infinity Wales.
Out of Infinity Wales. And I also wore my whale necklace because...
Yeah.
You know, I was dressed up.
You've got a shark necklace on right now. And you have a whale necklace. How was Baby Metal then? Because, again, mainly through your stories, didn't look like they had a particularly big show?
No, so it wasn't the same...
They had no show at Glastonbury. They literally just had really nice screen visuals and that was it.
It was not the same level as Gojira, certainly. That was another level. I've never seen, like I said, I've never seen anything like that at Brixton. That was a really level show. So Baby Metal were cool. Their production was more like they had CO2 and they had fire. So it was still cool, like, when it went off. But it was a lot more stripped back than Gojira. They had the cami band at the back of the stage. And it was almost like there was an invisible line. You've got the cami band kind of at the back that didn't ever come forward. And then Baby Metal at the front, who were always in their formations in the centre of the stage. And obviously we should say as well, Sue Metal, obviously the lead singer, Moa Metal, and then there's a...
Yes, the mysterious third person on stage. That was a Glastonbury as well.
Member
forgot
of
about
Baby
that.
Metal. People have been calling her Riho Metal because she's from an idol band in Japan. She's very well known. But she's currently, her status
a veteran of the scene.
Exactly. Currently her status is that she is a dancer within the Baby Metal formation in the Baby Metal world, but she's not an official Baby Metal member. So. Okay.
Official. Is that the official
That's
line?
The official line. From the Fox God himself, delivered through his emissaries to me. Because I've never met him.
Okay, so, hey, Baby Metal's PR.
Shout just because
you're like, Adam.
Just because you're like Fox God. But yeah, they came on to Meg It Soon, which is cool because that's kind of a classic now. You know, you kind of forget they've actually been around, you know, when they played...
5 years.
Yeah, there you go, good maths.
It was when Gimme Choco came out.
So they kind of feel, you know, like they have been around, they're a bit more established now, and they do have a back catalogue to play, and they came on to Meg It Soon, and Riho Metal, as I'm just going to call her, not an official member, she knew all the routines, there was nothing out of place. She's been in the band for 6 days at this point.
And, what?
Yeah, 6 days. That's how long she'd been.
Wait, so was Glastonbury her first performance?
She also performed with them in Japan.
Oh.
So they did 2 shows in Japan, back to back, flew to England and played Glastonbury. So they'd had, like, a super packed schedule. And I don't know how they keep going, because they have a lot of energy. But Riho knew all the routines. She looked like a total pro. She felt very stage school in that she's very professional. There are lots of smiles. You could tell you just could put her in a room, teach her a dance routine. She'd probably learn it in like a few hours. She was just super on point, basically. Moa and Sue Metal still kind of do look more like they are Baby Metal band members. There's more of a kind of fluency to their movements and more... It's hard to put my finger on, but you feel like they're band members. Like, they just kind of do it and,
They're probably not having to remember it.
Exactly.
I mean, they've been doing some of those dance routines for, like we said, 5 years now.
So. But I don't think it's so much that. It's more like, yeah, she felt more kind of stage schooly and like she was doing a performance, whereas Moa and Sue do feel sort of like real band members, in inverted commas. You know, yeah. It is a different kind of band to what we're used to, but it feels more authentic. So, but, you know, it was good to have the three of them because it meant they could do all the routines and, you know, that was amazing to see. Elevator Girl, that sounds massive.
Yeah.
It really brought home to me that they get these really talented songwriters. You know, they keep it a mystery, but they are songwriters who are professional songwriters who've produced a lot of hits. And it just sounded really massive. It's a really massive song. We talked about Ind Metal, as it was in the set list. Really cool, that Bollywood vibe, how they're fusing kind of those styles and cultures. And even if you're not into baby metal, you can never say they're a boring band. You know, they come out with these new songs. No, a few people would say that. Papaya as well, that also sounded really massive. That's got a turn in from a Thai rapper that he's got a guest spot on it. So they've got, you know, they've again, they're mixing all these different styles and they're just not boring. They're just doing all these different things that you don't expect. When you know there's a new baby metal song, it's not just like, oh, it's Gimme Chocolate again. It's like, oh, this song's got a guest rapper in. This song's influenced by Bollywood. This song has got like a really insane hook in it. There's something in each one that just makes it really unique. And actually, I thought Gimme Chocolate sounded a bit quaint now. It kind of almost does sound a bit dated, like that was the band 5 years ago. They had a couple of interludes, probably to do their hair and makeup and kind of have a drink and come back on. Because, you know, as I've
water,
said before,
I should clarify, is
yeah, drink of water.
Get beard up backstage.
As I said before, it's amazing how much they are able to do all the dance routines or, you know, do everything they do.
Yeah, their energy is out of control.
That is what I'm trying to say. The Cami band, who obviously mentioned, I think they've all got fake long hair now as well. I'm not sure who's in the band now, but I don't think they all have real metal hair. I think they've got like wigs and masks on. I'm very curious to see who those people are, but we will never know.
Enough.
Again, the crowd there, a different crowd to what Kajira were, but they were screaming. There was this guy behind me, I think he was in his 20s, and he had someone with him who looked like maybe he was his dad. And I can't remember which song it was, but he turned to his dad and he said, oh, that made me a bit emotional. And he was like, legitimately.
Really?
Yeah, and it wasn't, I don't think it was like an emotional song particularly, it was like just one of their hits, but there's that. Again, there's that massive devotion from their fans. If you're a Baby Metal fan, you are going to bat for Baby Metal 100%. You are going to scream your heart out. You are going to buy the merch.
Yeah, of course.
The merch was limited to 2 designs per person, probably to avoid disappointment for people.
Yeah. How did Sleep Token go down? Did you catch them?
Didn't actually catch them, which is a real shame because I would have loved to. But we were on some super secret hammer business, so I didn't see them.
To be revealed later.
Karate Still Rules.
Oh, cool.
And I've almost finished. Are you looking at me like I'm going on about Baymill, which I am?
It's not
but
like that.
The one was really good as well. They had Sue do that on her own, like come out and sing most of that. And her voice was actually good. And you could tell she was singing. It wasn't like a tape or anything. So she kind of had a bit of her own spotlight. And yeah, it's just cool. They've got a bit of a back catalogue now. And they've announced a tour for next year, which is their first UK tour, which is really funny because I've seen them so many times now in London and at festivals, I kind of forget they haven't actually done a UK tour. And they're playing in London, they're playing at the Hammersmith Apollo.
Nice.
So I guess, you know, they did the Wembley show, but that was to launch Metal Resistance.
Yeah, it was a one-off.
And it was a one-off show, so that was really cool. But they're sort of going the touring route now where they'll be building up the fan base around the country.
Pinning the hard piles.
Yeah, exactly. And like going up venues and they're going to tour in the States as well. They're their biggest ever tour. I think it's a month and a half. So they're kind of doing the work now of getting known and, you know, releasing more music and really nailing it. And there's so much more confidence than they used to be as well. Even just watching the routines, it feels more like they know what they're doing and they're into it and they can just do it. So yeah, I think there's more exciting things to come from them.
Absolutely.
It doesn't feel like just a one-hit wonder. It feels like actually something with legs.
And that album, Metal Galaxy, is it called?
Yeah, Metal Galaxy.
Metal Galaxy could be out later this year. So exciting times in metal across the board. Speaking of which, I feel like Alice should talk now.
Yeah.
Hi.
What's been going on?
Still here.
What's been going on in the world of metal, Alice? Tell me now.
Well, Slayer have released a mysterious new teaser trailer with Danny Trejo.
What is that about?
We have no
we all watched
idea.
It?
Read us the
we
dialogue.
We've all seen it though, right?
Read us the dialogue.
Where is it?
Oh, sorry, I thought you had it.
No.
You threw it right under the bus then.
Thanks.
Read the dialogue.
It's really
so transcribed.
It's a silhouette
it's really
digging a grave while Danny Trejo does some
but
narration over the top
Danny
right.
Can I read the dialogue?
Silhouette.
It's really good.
Oh, the silhouette is Danny Trejo. Yeah,
the dialogue's really good. They say
you have to do it in the voice of Danny Trejo.
To every story, there is a tragedy. Life is a book filled with chapters. Some tell stories of a good time. Some tell stories of the dark. To every monster, there is a hero. To every nightmare, we all wake up. To every story, there is a final chapter. Some monsters become human. Other monsters reap for revenge. This is the end of the monsters.
Well, don't know what to make of that. No. More US dates?
Give me
a... I mean, people are speculating maybe they've got a final album up their sleeves. And we do know that there's unreleased material from the World Painted... not World Painted Blood. What was the last one called? Repentless.
Yeah, they said there is unreleased material.
But they could have actually just jumped back in the studio, of course. We don't really know that, but...
It says coming fall 2019. That's autumn to UK listeners.
Interesting.
Yes.
So I've got another interesting tidbit for this. I am friends with Jessica Pimentel on Facebook, who won our Spirit of Metal Award at the Metal Hammer Golden Gods last year.
Star
of Orange is the New Black, and has her own band, of course. She posted this video. Now, I might just be really into too much of this. She might just be excited about the whatever this is going to be, like we all are. But she said, "I've been biting my tongue for so long. Thank you, Slayer and Nuclear Blast, for this." And then she's hashtagged Slayer. Slayer and the Crusher. The Crusher is what she calls herself.
Yeah.
And hashtag Jessica Pimentel Music. And then hashtag Orange is the New Black Metal. So I'm wondering if she's involved in this as well somehow. Because
what
suggests to me.
What if it is new music and she's...
Why would you hashtag Jessica Pimentel Music over something that Slayer put out? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's definitely music then, isn't there?
So the plot thickens. What are Slayer up to?
Either that or her band is supporting them on some kind of show or tour.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good shout. That's a good shout.
But then Danny Trejo as well.
Sorry?
Danny Trejo as well. Maybe it's something
yeah,
like
why is Trejo involved?
South American or something.
Are we not even saying it's obvious? Maybe because she's literally an actress. Maybe it's... And he's an actor.
That's true.
Maybe there's some kind of weird Slayer film.
Mm. Ooh, yeah. Oh, maybe her and Danny are in a new Slayer video.
Yeah, it could be that.
Interesting. We genuinely have no idea, but we shall try and find out. Don't know what happened there. Phil Anselmo has suggested Down could reunite for the 25th anniversary. Well, for some 25th anniversary shows. Talked about getting Kirk Winstein back in the band as well for it. How do we feel about this? Are we just done with Phil now? Would we go to a Down show?
Oh, it's really hard. Like, I was hanging out at the weekend with the guys from Underside, the Nepalese metal band, who are really awesome. And they've been here doing shows. They played that show with Whitechapel and Download. And they went to see Phil Anselmo last Saturday, and he's one of their heroes, and they want their photos taken with him.
Played the Underworld, didn't they?
Yeah, and they're all, like, super, super excited. And I was like, oh, I find it a bit difficult to know what to do now because of sort of, you know, when he had to apologise for doing the white power gesture. And it's just really hard, isn't it? Like, I was just talking to them. I was like, you know, don't really know what to think. And they're like, we just love him. Like, we just love his music. It was so exciting to go there. And, you know, because he's one of metal's heroes, isn't he? So
yeah, and just part of one of, I mean, you're talking one of the four, five or six most important metal bands of all time.
Exactly.
But you can't really ignore his bullshit either. And yeah, it's a funny one. I don't know, I mean, I still listen to Down sometimes. I can't really remember the last time I went to listen to a Down album, but sometimes it comes on the mix and I'll be like, yeah.
Sometimes I put it on and then I just, because I've just forgotten, and then in the middle I'm like, oh, now I feel problematic.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Like, it's the same with, I mean, obviously a totally different and horrendous example, but it's the same with like Michael Jackson or anyone who's kind of done bad things or has just become a problematic figurehead.
I think there are
it just
a lot
you kind of have that gut reaction to music that is then followed by your mind going, oh, but wait a minute. What were you going to say, Alice?
I think there are a lot of problematic people in rock and metal.
There are.
And the history of rock and metal, and they just got away with it for so long during like the 70s and 80s and even 90s. And like now it's a lot more sort of transparent. But these people are still like, you know, treated like they're really, really, really important, which they are. But I just think we have to sort of distance the art from the artist at the end of the day.
So you would be, you know, you would. Would you go to a Down show? You a Down fan?
Yeah, I've seen Down. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen Down, but
I'd really
that was
like
since
to
he
I'd really like to
went out saying white power shit again.
Yeah,
I'd really like
go
to go to a Down show. I just feel guilty about it, probably.
Phil live is a mixed bag as well. I've seen him be pretty good, and I've seen him be not so good.
When I saw Down, they were amazing.
Yeah, I've seen him be. But yeah, actually, I've noticed Down have always been pretty good when I've seen him. Actually, to be honest. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think you can force people to not listen to stuff that means something to them because he said some dumbass shit. But.
Or you square it with your conscience in some way, and obviously this is total like middle class guilt, but you donate some money to an anti-racism charity and go and see Down.
Interesting. Maybe
just throwing it out there.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. You can donate money to charities anyway.
You can, Merlin.
Go
yeah.
do
which,
it.
Which we all enjoy doing.
Glad we cleared that up. What else is going on?
You're looking at me.
Yes, I am. Stop doodling pictures of ice cream onto your fucking podcast plan.
I like ice cream.
Alice has got a doodle of Ouroboros. Ouroboros. How do you say that?
Oh, you mean
Ouroboros.
Yeah.
Ouroboros.
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 Is that how you say it?
Ouroboros.
The snake
I
eating
say
itself. Alice has got like pentagrams and a snake
it's like
eating
a
its
medieval,
own tail.
It's like a medieval.
And literally has carefully illustrated numerous different ice creams. Which I presume is in relation to a question we've got coming up
it
later.
It is. Look, I'm wearing my special snake ring, which is like an Ouroboros but doesn't quite meet.
I have
snakes. I'm obsessed with it. We both have snake rings. Where's your snake ring, Merlin?
I want a snake ring.
You need a snake ring.
I do.
Somebody send Merlin a snake ring so he can be in the cool gang.
I love snakes.
What's going on with Welsh Sleeps then?
I don't know. Loz Taylor's dropped off the rest of Welsh Sleeps' current European tour dates for personal reasons. What do you know about this? I don't know anything about this.
I'll just take quotation marks on personal reasons, just so you
know.
It's a radio format. I don't know anything about this, to be honest, either. But yeah, Loz has dropped off the rest of Sleeps' current European tour dates. They're going to get in a replacement singer for those last few dates. I mean, maybe this is like just a one-off thing that's happened, something to do with family maybe, or just, I don't know, something that he needs to deal with personally. I have no idea. I certainly hope it's not anything reoccurring from old problems with his voice and throat and everything like that, because that's something
fear,
that's really been problematic for that band over the years, and I'd hate to see that happen again. I'm actually wearing a Welsh Sleeps t-shirt right now.
They've got so much momentum right now as well. Like, you just don't want anything to hold it back.
They have, yeah. I mean, they've had such a bumpy road, and hopefully this is hopefully whatever it is isn't too bad for Loz, and also hopefully it's something that will just be a one-off, because yeah, as you said, a lot of momentum again, and they are a great band. Shall we take some questions from the readers from facebook.com/metalhammerreaders? Who wants to take the most important question we've ever been asked?
I've got a long answer to it.
Really? Okay.
How?
Alice, you do the question, and then Al can go first.
Okay. Ben Wilmot asks, "What's your favourite ice cream?"
Massive
well,
question.
It's a massive
Big
question.
Deal.
Well, everybody, I have an ice cream maker, which is of catering standard.
Oh, my God.
Because I'm obsessed with
ice
cream.
Here we go.
And it's just one of my favourite things in the world. So it was a really difficult question, what's your favourite ice cream? So I've had to pick a few options. The first option is an ice cream flavour called Blue Cloud, which was stocked at an ice cream place.
Blue Cloud?
Blue Cloud. It was stocked at an ice cream place in a village where I grew up, and it was bright blue. And it sort of tasted like a cross between aniseed and bubblegum and some kind of dark fruit, and it was literally the most amazing flavour, and I was allowed it a couple of times as a treat as a kid, and I've never been able to find it since. And I think it was because it was made up, because the people who ran the people who ran the ice cream place, I think, just made this blue ice cream and named it Blue Cloud, and I just loved it, and I just would love to have Blue Cloud again, because it was honestly, I think it's like one of the greatest things I've eaten in my entire life. That's the holy grail of ice cream to me, is Blue Cloud. So every now and then I'll have a...
If anyone knows the whereabouts of Blue Cloud in 2014, get in touch.
Every now and then I'll see a blue ice cream and I'll have some to see if it's Blue Cloud.
Before you went out in public, like you see someone else with one. Blue Cloud.
But that's my dream. Blue Cloud is so good. Another one that is a dream cream is... is a flavour called... Well, it's a cart door flavour, and it's banana.
Fuck me, how much research have you done to this
research, I just really love ice cream. It's a cart door banana flavour. And where I first had it was at a festival in Nijmegen in the Netherlands.
Why did you say Netherlands in a Dutch accent?
I didn't!
Yeah, you didn't then, but you went, in the Netherlands.
Yes, I don't even know how to do a Dutch accent.
You definitely did do that.
Yeah, you
did.
Yeah.
So it just came out.
It was going, some kind
blah, 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 of... in the Netherlands.
I think I just forgot how to talk.
Okay.
But I went for Hammer. I want to say it was called Forterock, but now I've lost all sense of memory because you've just made fun of me.
I actually remember you going to a festival and coming back talking about banana ice cream.
Because it was so amazing. And
I have that memory engraved in my brain.
Fantastic ice cream, and I found it one time since at the end of Brighton Pier. So there's two places in the world you can get this ice cream, and I've googled it, and I think you can buy it, but only if you're like a caterer or something. So this banana cart door, that is a dream. So they were kind of like flavours.
Jesus Christ!
Just let me say a couple more. And then, sort of my generic favourites are probably, I've got a few: mint choc chip, chocolate, dulce de leche, and the speculoos ones.
What's dulce de leche?
It's like the...
caramelly.
Yeah.
Well, that's a flavour, not...
Yeah. Oh. I don't know how you pronounce it, so I probably got it wrong. And speculoos, like, you know those biscuits you get in hotels, but now they make ice cream out of them sometimes as well. I made that myself.
This is all so specific.
So I've got
impressed.
Two more things to say. I'll be really quick, though. So, also, I was thinking about how the ice cream is eaten, like how it's presented. You can have a cone or you can have a cup. But one of the things I really liked, again, from childhood, which you can still get, is when you get oysters, which is a wafer that has a marshmallow inside, and they do soft serve ice cream in it, so you can barely hold it because it's like an oyster.
Can you do this much research on the serious questions?
Is that because it looks like an oyster? It's not research, it's just stuff in my head.
All right, whatever, preparation.
And then my very last one is that I wasn't sure whether he meant like ice cream flavours or a prepackaged ice cream product. And if it's a prepackaged ice cream product, I'd probably pick a Cornetto and...
Right, that's all you needed to say.
Which flavour Cornetto though? Mint.
Good choices. Oh, wow. Well,
I like the strawberry one, but I really love mint chocolate chip ice cream because it's just a, like, really refreshing. Easy. Like, you know, you always know it's going to be good. It's going to be good anywhere you go. When the vanilla could be shit.
Would anyone be interested in an ice cream podcast?
No.
I also love Vermonster, which is like a maple syrup and pecan.
Where are you finding these things?
That's Ben and Jerry's.
Ben and Jerry's, yeah. Okay.
And then
I didn't even get into Ben and Jerry's.
And then Ben and Jerry's half baked is.
Yeah.
Is that one with half cookie dough, half chocolate fudge? Yeah, that's
delicious.
A banging ice cream.
That's
the
Iron Maiden
of
ice
creams
right
there.
The
core ones with the sauce down the middle.
Oh my god.
That is tough.
I like peanut butter ice creams as well.
That's disgusting.
They can be hit. They're horrible.
We're going to get that. We're going to edit that out.
Ben and Jerry's one, but it would be better if it had chocolate in them. In it, and I did actually message Ben and Jerry's about this, and they did reply on Twitter because I was like, it needs chocolate chips in it.
Which one is this?
It's a peanut butter ice cream.
Oh.
And I also really love raspberry ripple or general ripple ones.
Raspberry ripple, that's
a
classic flavour.
It's
classic,
it's just classic.
I've just gone really basic. I love a feast.
I think that's really boring.
Oh no, it's so satisfying because you get this. I love like thick proper chocolate bars, and you just get this big thick lump of chocolate in the middle of it, so you get like the refreshing ice cream that cools you down,
and taste nice, and then you get a big slab of chocolate in the middle. It was so good.
If you brought me a feast, I wouldn't say no to it, but I'd also say that the
chocolate, I wouldn't buy you a feast, I'd be eating it.
The chocolate centre's a bit cloying. It's a bit like cooking no. chocolate, and it's quite brittle.
No, it's delicious. Yeah, no, it's not.
Nah, no, it's I wouldn't
not.
Want that either.
No.
That's like a Magnum, a white chocolate.
That's like
a Magnum.
I do like white chocolate, man. I prefer almond.
The
Magnum,
almond,
though.
Almond,
they're so good.
Almond or mint. Yeah. Otherwise, Magnums can be a bit boring.
Yeah, but I like definitely like almond Magnums. If I'm really hot, I just want to cool down. Like Calippo is delicious. Love it,
yeah.
love it.
They're good. Yeah,
love it when it gets all mushy at the bottom.
I was
at the end.
Say that's I a love bit like a slushy. Slushy.
Yeah.
Well.
And I recently discovered an amazing ice cream. It's a Kinder Bueno cone.
I've seen those.
Oh my god, they're so
Kinder.
Good.
I think I might.
We hate Kinder.
Lunchtime.
Oh mate.
I might go on at lunchtime. I'm really hungry.
They've got them at W.H. Smith's in Paddington Station.
I'm going to go get one.
I should be getting paid for this. but yeah, if you like Kinder Bueno, the ice cream actually has that flavour, and it's got this thick layer of chocolate on top.
Do you know
top.
What I've
it's
not even
so
touched on at all? Ice cream sandwiches. When
yeah,
I go to America, all I do is eat ice cream sandwiches. The Oreo ones I've got here are really nice. If you go to Italy, you can get ice cream sandwiches where it's like a brioche bun. They're incredible.
Wicked. Well, I don't know if we've got time to spend that much on all the other questions here, but we'll give it a go.
You really picked my passion there, Ben.
Tom Byrne asks, if you were to be a fly on the wall during the recording of any album, which would you pick and why? Oh, no answers to that.
No, I have got an answer.
Oh, right, okay.
I actually thought I'd sit back and not answer straight away because I just went on about ice cream.
Oh, okay, well, I'll answer quickly
would you
first.
Like me to do mine?
I'll do mine quickly okay. first. Mine's really obvious, but the first Slipknot album, being in the studio with those personalities at, I mean, maybe even Isle would be more interesting because Isle was probably the height of their craziness. But what either of those first two Slipknot albums? But the first one, I mean, Ross Robinson was no stranger to. Angsty, crazy bands, but Slipknot must have just been something else entirely. And there was stuff
eight
getting
people as well.
Nine. Like,
oh yeah.
Come on, man. Well,
I always do this. I don't know why I can't count. Because I was thinking about Corey being number eight because it's infinity.
Yeah, fair.
It's zero.
But yeah, that would have been unbelievable. After reading. Long Hard Ride Out of Hell, I would have loved to have seen Manson recording Antichrist Superstar as well.
That's my choice.
Have you got that on there?
Yes.
Okay, well, you add more to that then.
That's my choice. So that was recorded February to August 96 and it was at Trent Reznor's Nothing Studios in New Orleans, which is super cool. I've been there, it's now a clothes shop. I actually wanted to buy a t-shirt from there, but it was a really expensive clothes shop, so I just stood outside and had a photo.
That's awesome.
But New Orleans is a super cool place anyway. It's so interesting, like the mix of culture and like religion and voodoo and the buildings and the climate and everything. It's just super cool. So I think that in itself like is just an interesting location. And then the whole chemistry between Manson and Reznor and sort of the tension of how Reznor was helping produce the bands and, you know, sort of package them up in a certain way and bring out different parts of them. But then Manson and his bandmates were so insanely behaved that there became a tension a bit between them and, you know, sort of Reznor having to deal with that. But Manson at the time, he talks about in his book and various other places, he was experimenting with different cocktails of prescription drugs. And he even says that he was shoving needles under his fingernails so he could feel something because it was quite emotionally numb.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's just
metal.
Insane. I mean, it's not nice, but I don't know what kind of things he was doing. He was also doing lots of things like watching hardcore pornography and masturbating and depriving himself of sleep and all kinds of weird things. And I think at one point he said that he had like put a cardboard tube on his dick and a blonde wig and a crown from Burger King on his head and had gone outside and just walked around.
We've all done that.
I don't actually. I'm glad you've never done that to the office though. So I don't know, like.
You've been here for Dress Down Wednesdays, mate.
It's a Wednesday today.
Oh god!
So like obviously Tom's question is if you were to be a fly on the wall, I don't know whether I'd want to be a fly on the wall actually seeing it, but I'm also kind of curious to see what the reality of that situation was and
definitely.
How everyone was reacting.
Definitely.
You'd probably be a fly on the wall just sort of like vomiting.
Alice, do you have any
any of the Lane Staley era Alice and Chains albums?
I imagine that could be quite a difficult experience at some points, to be honest.
The earlier ones, maybe not so much.
And Alice in
Chains would be quite fun. I reckon they would have had a laugh together.
Alice in Chains is a band had a huge sense of humour, didn't they?
Yeah,
this is one of the things that I think maybe they get annoyed with sometimes, is that people kind of always focus on the drugs and the darkness, but actually, like, they have this chemistry and this like sense of fun. And
definitely, like any interviews like from around that sort of time, they're just like really fun, like kind of piss taking regular guys, like just mates, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, yeah, about that.
Yeah, it would be cool.
Someone do another question. We got time.
Okay, so did Miley Cyrus just ruin metal at Glastonbury? Asks Kurt Gobang 619.
Not his real name. So this is in response to Miley Cyrus coming off the back of covering and adapting Head Like a Hole by Nine Inch Nails for the new Black Mirror TV series. She turned up at Glastonbury looking very rock and roll, looking very grungy and kind of 90s rocker, and she did the Nine Inch Nails cover, and she also dropped in a bit of Metallica as well, covered a bit of Nothing Else Matters.
And she also did Old Town Road, which was based on a Nine Inch Nails sample from Ghosts.
There you go. So, has she ruined metal?
No, I like it. I think it's good.
Metal.
I think it's good.
Oh, I can have a go.
You can't ruin it.
I think it's good having more representation from the mainstream, like we talked about before, and I think she's cool, and I like the Black Mirror episode, which I've now watched.
Can't ruin metal from outside the metal community anyway. Like, if you want to cover metal,
you have to dismantle it from within.
Yes, exactly. So, no, it's just, you know, if you want to cover metal, go for it. You don't have to listen to it.
No, I didn't even know it had happened until I got back, because I was watching metal on the instead at Glastonbury. So there.
There's a follow-up question, though. Where do I send a rant letter, to get a feature of Metal Hammer about how salty a lot of the metal community, who didn't even attend, we're about Glastonbury this weekend? And that's from Joe Breeze.
So yeah, Joe Breeze has actually sent me this letter.
Really? He has?
It's about 1,000 words long. And I'll email Joe back, and if he's happy for me to read it out, maybe I'll read it out on the podcast next week. Because it is, he's got opinions.
So had some thoughts.
He does not hold back, does old Joe Breeze. But yeah, if anyone wants to send a rant to us, you can do it at facebook.com/metalhammerreaders. Obviously, that's probably the quickest way for us to see it and respond to it. Or you can email us at metalhammer@futurenet.com as well. So we welcome your rants. Well, don't know if I should have said that now, but yeah. What's the worst that can happen?
Yay, rants.
Zach Wells has a question about the podcast itself. It's quite an interesting one. He says, why is there a time constraint on the podcast? I know you share a studio. Honoured that you think it's a professional studio. We're actually in a meeting room at the moment. But hopefully that could change moving forward. We've got some stuff coming up. Is it really that busy? Obviously, I realise that you're all busy people. However, I feel like the pods could benefit from more studio time. Well, I mean, that's a fair question. I guess a lot of podcasts out there will run for like 2.5 hours, 3 hours. We definitely don't have time to do that. Obviously, the podcast is something we love doing, and it's an important part of Metal Hammer, but it's one part of many roles we have here. I'm editor of the magazine, Al's deputy editor, Alice is online editor, so we've all got a lot of shit going on. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, we do share not just podcasting space, but just meeting space as well with a ton of other very big magazines. You know, Classic Rock work here, Prog work here, 442 work here, Tech Radar work here, Guitarist work here, Total Guitar work here. We've got a lot of other big brands who all, you know, want space and want to do their own things as well. So we don't want to hog up too much space. But, you know, where possible, we will always try and get a bit more time in there, especially if we think there's a lot to talk about and a lot to go through. So, yeah, we'll certainly think about that. Hopefully we're getting some more, even better mics as well. So we are looking to do more stuff on the podcast.
Me and Alice get hangry as well.
Yeah, we can't do it over lunch.
We're doing it over lunch right now, aren't we?
I'm so hungry.
Oh, God.
We need to finish.
We need to move on. Someone do this last question.
When no ice creams.
Someone do this last question, then. Fuck!
Just a random childless loser from TJ asks, with the anniversary of Slipknot's debut album in mind, did you guys immediately think this band of absolute maniacs was going to be successful? Did you have any initial doubts?
I was a child, so...
I actually did have some initial doubts.
Did you?
I was also a child, but I was a slightly older child by a couple of years.
I didn't get into them until Iowa, so I was...
So, people around school, like younger people in the years below me, started wearing hoodies and being moshers and listening to Slipknot. And I was kind of like a bit, oh, this is a bit silly, isn't it? Like, it's just people sort of yelling.
You're
and...
so mature for your time.
I mean, I wasn't.
Fucking dire over here.
But I was just a bit like, oh, you know, it sounds a bit like, oh, I'm mad at my parents and stuff.
Yeah,
but
no, then, I was a bit like that.
But I was into other...
refused to like new metal for that very,
no,
very
I was into
reason.
Other stuff. I was into Linkin Park, I was into Limp Bizkit, but...
that's not juvenile.
But I mean, I think it was literally just a culture thing, and I say culture in a very narrow sense of the word, in the fact that I like listening to those bands, and I saw them as part of kind of this wider world I was getting into. And Slipknot, I think, just because it was like the boys in year seven with their hoodies being children, and I was probably like, I don't know, year nine or something, can't do the maths. But I was a bit like, oh, you know, this is like, just... I don't know, it was just, I felt like, I think when the record came out, I wasn't even aware of it until a couple of years later anyway, but I was like, oh, a bit like all these kids are getting into Slipknot. And I heard Iowa, and then I started getting into them a bit more, and then I just kind of gave into them and went, yeah, it's actually good. So I think at the beginning, I thought it was just a bit childish. Mm-hmm. I was only a teenager, like I said. What year was that debut album out? It's the anniversary this year, isn't it? So... yeah, so I was not like massively old or anything, but I think just because the kids like a couple of years below me were sort of wearing the hoodies.
Yeah. See, like there weren't many, because I was like in year seven or whatever, or like just before then it probably came out, but like I don't remember. Well, there were kids in my year that liked new metal and started wearing like big trousers, pretty much. I mean, that was like... the mosher thing.
Love them big jeans.
Yeah, but I mean, I love them
but
as
like,
well.
Yeah, but they weren't really into Slipknot. It was actually, I think it was like a couple of years older than me, weirdly, which would probably be your age that were listening to like Slipknot and Korn.
I would have been like 15 or something.
It was like, yeah, it was like year 8 and 9.
15.
I remember girls in like year 8 and like 9 wearing like, specifically Korn more than Slipknot, but I do remember one girl who had like a Slipknot hoodie and stuff.
I think that's Marilyn the thing, actually. I think I didn't really know about them until I was a couple of years older, and by that time I was like late teens, and it just seemed a bit childish. I don't know, but I was wrong, wasn't I? So I can admit that now. I think hearing something like people equal shit, I was like, oh, that's just really childish.
Yeah, I mean,
I still sometimes,
because I love people equal shit. It's like my second favourite Slipknot song.
Yeah.
After Eyeless, if you
listen. But at the time,
I still catch
like,
myself singing that sometimes. And then you do stop and think, this is ridiculous.
At the time, I was just like, this is really childish. But then as I got into more heavy music and just kind of suspended that sort of like snobbishness, I suppose. I was like, this music is just really good music, and these people have this really good energy, and they're doing all these shows that are really capturing people's imaginations. I probably wasn't as articulate about
that. Didn't really see past the fact that they had like horror masks and horror videos and stuff, but
that again
really
actually seemed quite
it.
Childish at the time to me. It was a bit like, oh, you know, whatever, just putting a mask on. But
do you like Marilyn Manson by then?
Yeah, probably.
Interesting.
It just seemed like a different kind of thing. I think, like I said, with younger people getting into it. But then I was a teenager, so I was contrary anyway.
I started
listening to them, and then it just all kind of merged into it. And I sort of understood the metal scene a bit more and understood a bit what it was all about, and then just kind of liked it. So
I actually found them too heavy when they first came out, because I'd been into...
Too heavy as well.
Iowa probably came out about 9 or 10 months after I'd properly got into metal, so I guess I hadn't gone into the really heavy stuff by that point so much.
I was just a bit like, oh,
I'm
they're just
left behind of all songs and being like, oh, fucking hell, this is a bit intense.
But I remember that too. I think that's what I thought. Oh, they're just like mad at their parents and like just making some noise, and I was just like, I don't really know what it is, and changed my mind on it.
Yeah, I mean, once I properly got into it, I was like, this is actually good. And then I actually remember going and buying the Digipack version of the self-titled album.
Digipack.
And
oh,
was just
funny.
Like, oh my god, yeah. Like, especially with that opening of Sick, like the little drum and bass drop and stuff is just like, oh my god.
Borrowed Iowa from the library.
That's what that is, like, that's what I'm talking about. But yeah, it's just one album, 20 years old, fucking hell. We'll be back next week when we review.
What was that?
The second biggest metal gig of the year. We had Metallica at the first, now we're at the second biggest metal gig
this
of the year.
This is the
gig
I'm most excited about this year.
It's going to be mad. We're talking about Rammstein in the home of metal, Milton Keynes. It's going to be ridiculous. Yeah, we'll be reviewing all the show, all the pyro, all the weird little things they're no doubt going to do on stage. It's going to be very, very good. Don't forget that the latest issue of Metal Hammer is out right now. We've got Sabaton on the front cover. The regular edition comes with a free tank and free Sabaton stickers and a free Avenged Sevenfold poster pack. The special bundle edition, which we launched last week, and we've still got a few of those on sale, not many though. Those come with the Sabaton tank and the stickers and a signed, hand-signed by the whole band's lyric sheet. And an exclusive patch you can't get anywhere else. So if you need more Sabaton in your life, or you're a big Sabaton fan, you cannot afford to not pick this up. Go to tinyurl.com/battlebundle to buy it right now. It's really good.
They're actually playing Sabaton before Baby Metal came on last night.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Synergy. I love it. We'll see you next week, everybody. Thanks for listening.
See ya.
Bye.